Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on predictions for the rest of 2010 when we come back. Well, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on the planet. Today, it's only 38 days. Now, we produce grain for export, but then we import our grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this Global 2000 population reduction program. This globalization may be good for business, but globalization is bad for you and it's bad for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a year or more. Today, we are satisfied with a 3-day supply in our refrigerators and we believe in our supermarket system. That's a just-in-time delivery to feed us all. Now, over the past 60 years, we've traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. And these Global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so says the Club of Rome. These evil madmen with their Global 2000 agenda, a genocide agenda, have a cause that they're willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, but let us live for our cause. And let me show you from the scripture how to be a live survivor instead of a dead victim. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost anything. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and free of charge. Now, you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, again, that's georgegordon.org, and then click onto the archives page. All right, we are reviewing the year 2010 from a prophetic point of view. Back in the beginning of the year, I did a series of programs on here's what we're expecting for 2010, and now that 2010's over, we want to take a look at the predictions from the gurus that thought they knew what was going to happen in 2010, and then we'll see after we grade them and give them a score how accurate these prophecies for 2010 have been. Now, I did program one, and we took a look at 6 or 7 of these gurus, and we found that some of them score 0. We haven't got anybody that scored 50% yet in their predictions for 2010. And then I digressed a bit, and I said, now, the problem that we all have here isn't in being able to determine what's going to happen if we spend ourselves into bankruptcy. Do you think that the finance company is going to come take our car, foreclose on our house, maybe take our consumer goods? Or do you think they're going to let us keep them and then roll that debt over indefinitely? Now, each and every one of us knows... Maybe you've never been through bankruptcy, but you've seen and you've heard and you've read. Bankruptcy isn't fun, tain't pleasant. It's kind of like divorce, you know. Now, you know a lot of people that are divorced, and maybe you've never been divorced. But you just kind of have a sixth sense that that's probably not going to be too much fun. So you can take it from me. Now, I've never gone through bankruptcy, but I've been to the top, made a lot of money, and then lost it all, and been down the bottom, and then went back up to the top, made a lot of money, and then I lost it all, and then down at the bottom, I worked real hard and I made a lot of money and went up to the top, and it's a yo-yo. You know, you're at the top and then you're down at the bottom. And now that going broke ain't fun. Now you can take it from me. I tested it and I didn't think it was very good. And divorce, I tried that once, and I can tell you from personal experience that wasn't any fun. That was not a good plan at all. But you know, things happen. Now nations have gone bankrupt in the past. Hyperinflation has occurred in the past. And from every report that I've seen, hasn't been fun, never was good. Didn't come with a good outcome. So the Figge people, remember this guy, Harry Figge, working for the Grace Commission in the early days of the Reagan administration, they took a look at the debt problem and the deficit, and they came up with a plan. They said, hey, this is like shooting fish in a barrel. We can balance the budget and we can pay off the national debt. And at the time they were doing this, the debt was at $1 trillion, and the deficits were at about $128 billion a year. Now, yesterday in the last segment of the program, I read you a paragraph. I'm going to start right there again, where Figge, talking to these three groups back in 1990, he said, let me explain that to you. If you start with the Graham-Rudman bill, that's $168 billion. Now, remember the credit card example, when you took $100 away from the Kroger or the IRA and you sent them an IOU? The government's doing that to nine trust funds, including Social Security, military pensions, railroad pensions, and postal pensions. Now, let me just pause here and interject something. The government back in 1990 was raiding the postal pension system, the railroad retirement system, Social Security. There's nine of these, military pensions and so on. And they've already taken that money and spent it. And this was going on back in the Clinton years. You know, back in the Bush and the Clinton years, this is Bush Senior and Clinton. We had this roaring 90s. I mean, you know, money was just everywhere. And this guy Figge is going around, he's telling people, now, wait a minute, now we're on our way to national insolvency. We're on our way to bankruptcy. It was 20 years ago. Now, nobody listened to him. Nobody listened to the Grace Commission. You know, the good times are rolling, you know. Let's have another drink and, you know, crack open another beer and get another package of pretzels over here or potato chips and let's have a good time. All right, well, now 20 years later, it's time to pay the piper. Now, the kick to this was, he said this is going to happen in 1995 and 2000. He was wrong. It didn't happen in 95, and it didn't happen in 2000, but it happened in 2008 and 2010. So, he's 10 years too soon. And that's what I've been pointing out here, is that all of these gurus, when they tell you that the Fed is going to do this, that, or something else, or municipal bonds are going to collapse, or the dollar is going to be devaluated, they put a date on it. And they're wrong every single time, or damn near every time, because these dates never materialize. They're always too soon. You know, they think this thing's going to collapse, you know, next year, next week, or next month. Now, this thing's been dragging out. I've been watching this for 30 years. And I was expecting it to happen in 87, didn't? Then I thought, ah, here it is, 92, it's going to happen. Nope, didn't, wasn't there. Then in 2001, hey, this is it, this is the big kahuna. Nope. Then came 2007. I said, oh, here comes the big kahuna. Now, this thing's been dragging on now for 3 years. December of 07 is when we started this recession. And then through 08, you know, Lehman Brothers collapsed in September right after the Olympics, and then things really got serious. Then 09 was really a bummer year, but the recession, they tell us, the recession ended by June of 09. Long, deep, difficult, but it's over. Green shoots are showing up everywhere. So I mentioned to you the other day, now we got some really big problems. See, we've got problems greater than the housing meltdown coming. See, the commercial real estate market is on the verge of collapse. And it's going to. I just don't know when. And some of these gurus said it was going to be in 2010. It wasn't. So therefore, it must be in 2011. I don't know that. I just know that it's unsustainable. It isn't changing. And if it continues on like it is, the ultimate end to this is going to be the collapse of the commercial real estate system. Now, watch this. Meredith Whitney comes out the other day and she says, oh, God, that's not the worst problem. The worst problem is municipal bonds. That's an even bigger market, and they're on the verge of collapse. When's that going to happen? Well, it didn't happen in 2010. So, therefore, it must be going to happen in 2011. Well, I don't know that. And I wouldn't go so far as to make such a prediction. What if they don't collapse until 2015? And all these people are saying, well, it's this year, it's 2011. Nope. Well, it's this year, 2012. Nope. Well, it's this year, 2013. See, and these guys are crying wolf. And then the people are listening to these wolves, these people crying wolf, and then it doesn't happen. And so what's going to happen as we progress along? They're going to say, well, I don't believe it. And then when the wolf really comes, they'll catch them with their pants down. So if you want to do people a favor, tell them this is what we can expect based upon what's happened in past history. I don't know when it's going to happen, but we're doing the same things that the Brazilians and the Argentines and Hungarians and Germans and Chinese did, and I think we're going to get the same result at some point in time. Now, he says, I want to give you a few more examples here. So that's the first thing that's been foisted off on the people. The savings and loan crisis is number two. All right, now remember, number one, Figge says, they're raiding the pension funds and spending that money and telling you they're balancing the budget. Or they're showing you smaller deficits than would otherwise be there. Then the second thing was the savings and loan crisis back in 1988, 89, 90, along in there. Well, Mossbacher, our country's lead economist, made very sure when Bush stuck his neck out in the savings and loan crisis that those costs were taken off the deficit. Current estimates are that the savings and loan fiasco is going to cost us $500 billion overall and $100 billion next year. There's another $100 billion that's not being counted. Now, that's what's going on here today with these two wars. Nobody is counting the costs of these two wars. Furthermore, they're still taking all the money that's supposed to be going into Social Security and these retirement funds, and they're spending that on current expenditures. They're all broke. They're all out of money, which prompts Meredith Whitney to come along and say, oh, my God, here comes problem number two. Or number three, problem number one now, if you're keeping score here, was the collapse of the housing market. Problem number two will be the collapse of the commercial real estate market. Then number three comes up here, it'll be the collapse of the municipal bond market. Got that? And nobody's paying attention here. Now, one of them collapsed, that was the housing market, and we got two more big ones over here now. That's going to be the bond market and the commercial real estate market. And then there's another biggie over here, and I just mentioned this to you the last time. Illinois is bankrupt. California is bankrupt. 35 states are bankrupt. Only 15 states are solvent. 35 are bankrupt. And all 50 of the states have pension plans. And the pension plans are underfunded by $100 billion. So not only are the bonds that these states, counties, and cities liable for, but in addition to that, all the pension funds, they're underfunded too. They can't pay that off. So you got state debt, and then you got the pension fund debt. Then you got the housing collapse, which is already underway. Then you got the commercial real estate market, which is going to collapse. And then you got the municipal bond market, which is going to collapse. And then you've got the state pension funds, which is going to collapse. What's that going to spell? Well, first of all, the federal government cannot let California go bankrupt. California is not going to go broke. Rest assured. It ain't going to happen. The federal government will come in there and give them the money. But in the process of doing that, they're just going to create it right out of thin air. There isn't anybody to borrow from. The Chinese aren't lending us any of their money. They're stopping that. The Japanese and everybody else, when these bonds are being sold, there's fewer and fewer buyers in the bond market, and it's the Federal Reserve that's going in there and monetizing the debt. They just buy them up and then spend the money out into circulation. Just spend the money out, give you people your Social Security checks. Now, you people in turn take that down to Walmart and you're buying stuff, and so far the Chinese are still shipping. One of these days they're going to quit. And when they quit shipping, boy, that's going to be traumatic, because our current account deficit is about $600 billion a year. $600 billion a year. Now, that's big. We're exporting $200 billion, importing $800 billion. We're going to take about a 75% hit in our standard of living, because we don't make shoes in this country. We don't make shirts and socks and clothes and textiles. We don't make a lot of that stuff, and it all comes in here from other countries, and then when that gets shut off, we won't have it to buy. That'll come rationing. Hey, this thing is headed for a no good end. But I don't know when. So I'm not going to stick my neck out and say, well, 2011 is the big year. And I'm going to show you as we progress along, these guys don't know either. They don't know. And they ought to stop using dates. They ought to say, well, this is what I see coming. I don't know how long that they can fend this off, but the ultimate end is going to be the same. Now, the deficit has gone from $168 billion to $388 billion. And I haven't talked to you about the student loan problem. I haven't talked to you about the $300 to $500 billion toxic waste cleanup that's going to be coming from our military bases. And I haven't talked to you about the crack babies or AIDS or any of the new programs that Congress is talking about. Remember, this is back in the early 1990s, long before Obamacare. Now, this Obamacare is an abortion of a magnitude of about 10 compared to what we're talking about here with AIDS, crack babies, and student loans. That's a $1 trillion tax increase all by itself, and that's just the openers. Now, they tell you, oh, no, it's self-sufficient, and it's going to pay for itself. Name one of these programs that ever paid for itself. Name one. I don't know of any. They always come to us, and they say, let's have Medicare, and it'll be self-sustaining and pay for itself. It didn't. Let's have Social Security. It'll be a pay-as-you-go, self-sustaining, and it'll take care of itself. No, it didn't. That's just, you know, the way government is. They come to us, and they tell us what we want to hear. Then we say, well, okay, go ahead and do it. And every single time, we get a bad result. And I'm telling you, I don't believe for a minute that that's accidental. These guys aren't that dumb. It is true that once in a while you can make a miscalculation and make a mistake. But after you've made 25 or 30 mistakes in a row, and you never even accidentally have one thing ever turn out right for you. Boys and girls, that's not dumb. That's way beyond dumb. That's conniving. That's a plan. That's an agenda. So we're running right now, Figge says, a true deficit of $300 to $500 billion. Now, this is up in the early 1990s. And my estimate is that at $500 billion, we will lose our capacity, our capability to control that deficit by taxation. Now, don't ever think for a minute that Congress doesn't want inflation, because they know and know full well that the only way that they can pay off all this debt is with inflated dollars. So if that isn't bad enough, the financial structure of the United States is now very tenuous, and I'll give you a few examples. Now, if this thing was tenuous back in the early 1990s, what in the hell do you think it is today? Figge said, now, from 1982 to 1992, it's grown from manageable and we can solve the problem to very tenuous. By the time the second Bush came in, you know, in 2001, it was unmanageable. That's why they needed that war in Iraq. We've got to get a war going so that we can pump money into the economy. They did. And they have kept this thing going now. They've got a second war going, and they're keeping the balls in the air. Now, everybody's looking at this and saying, well, I don't think that they can do this forever. Even the guy that's keeping the balls in the air says, this isn't sustainable. I'm able to do it for right now, but we got to come up with a conclusion. Barack Obama appoints a commission of 18 people. I forgot the exact name of it now, but it was a commission here to balance the budget. Same thing as the Grace Commission. And when they let out their first tentative results, Nancy Pelosi says, not on my watch. Which is very predictable. That's what Reagan said, not on my watch. Nobody's going to adopt these programs. It's too stiff. It's too stiff. Now, you do have one guy. I just saw him on TV the other night. You got a governor in New Jersey by the name of Christie. Now, New Jersey's bankrupt. New Jersey's broke. Can't pay their bills. Not collecting enough taxes. And then they had a stimulus plan. They were going to build a tunnel under the river over to New York. I don't know if it was $600 million or $600 billion. I kind of lose track of these big numbers, but I think it's more like $600 million. They were going to employ about 6,000 people on it for a year or two. He said that would be a great stimulus plan, but we said we don't have the $600 million. We don't have the credit. We don't have the money. And we can't borrow it and can't get it anywhere. So he's been making cuts. And the other day, he cut the teacher's salaries by 10%. And then he went to a town meeting, and this teacher just really took him to task. And she just ranting and raving and jumping up and down, pawing the ground, biting the bushes, and doing all those things that teachers do when they're getting stuck to them. And so she was really ticked off. She'd given him a piece of her mind. And he said, well, lady, I'm sympathetic to you, and I recognize all your great gifts and talents. But you see, we don't have enough money to pay you. That's the bottom line. And now that there's no more money, I had to lay 10% of you off. I think he laid off about 10% of the teachers and then cut their salary by 10%. And he said, now, you've got a job. It ain't paying as much as it did, but you're not one of those that's laid off. And if it's not satisfactory, why don't you go get a job someplace else? You know, that's the closer. You got 10% unemployment, and you got the states. Now, this is the first state that I know of that's been laying off teachers. Now, there might have been some others that were laying off, but there's going to be some big layoffs coming. All you public workers out there, wake up, smell the coffee here, coming your way, coming to a city near you very shortly. And then when that happens, you're going to be very disappointed. I mean, that's just where the results of life lead us. Now, this school teacher, she went over and she sat down. I'm sure that she was ticked off, but I mean, you can vote that governor out. The last governor in there, his name was John Corzine. He was from Goldman Sachs. Now, you'd think a guy from Goldman Sachs, you know, a banker, comes in as your governor. Don't you think he'd be able to balance your budget and he'd just be a real smart money manager? No, he ran the state into debt by about $10 billion, I think is the number, 8 or 10. Then he leaves, and this guy Christie comes along. I don't know what his credentials are. But he says, well, I can't balance the budget, and we haven't got enough money coming in, and it's getting less and less every day, and we're going to have to quit paying. In Illinois, they haven't woke up. They're still walking around in a fog. They're still spending the same amount of money. They haven't got it to spend. And so now... the highway patrol can't buy gasoline, and their credit cards are no good. Well, just keep right on spending up there in Illinois. Don't let me get in your way. And pretty shortly, what's going to happen is, if you can't recognize your bankruptcy and take care of your finances yourself, then somebody else is going to step in and take care of them for you. Boy, that's going to be traumatic. At some point in time, the people of Illinois are going to wake up and there just isn't any more services. The highway patrol isn't going to be out on the road, period. No money, no cars, no paychecks. Yeah, you can pay these guys with warrants and you can give them chits and IOUs, but at some point in time, even that wears out. So Figge goes on here and he says, let's talk about our commercial banks. He says, we definitely have a recession on the horizon and we're just beginning to see it. And we're seeing it in furniture and housing, all through construction and aerospace. So let's talk about our commercial banks. Since 1983, 713 commercial banks have failed. Now that's only 5% of the commercial banks in the United States. But when you fail 5% of your banks in your good times, can you think about what's going to happen when bad times come? The FDIC chairman, Bill Seidman, came out the other day and he said, if we get a severe recession, the safety net that we have under the commercial banks will never hold. There isn't enough money in it. Now, most people don't realize this, but 13 insurance companies failed in 1988. Now, I'm talking about property and casualty, not health insurance companies. 39 failed in 1989, so we've had 52 insurance companies fail in the last 2 years. The other thing that you don't hear about is that the federal government is underwriting $5.8 trillion of debt from things that aren't truly government, like deposit insurance, loan guarantees, pension programs, government-sponsored enterprises, direct loan programs, and it goes on and on. Now, the last time I saw a number here, boys and girls, it was $100 trillion is what the federal government's on the hook for. And that doesn't count the money that the states owe to their pension programs and commercial real estate and the budget deficits. And the feds cannot let California and Illinois go upside down. And I think that the state legislature in Springfield and Sacramento, they're sitting there saying, listen, when this thing starts breaking down, Barack Obama is going to be to our aid, and he's going to give us the money. I'll just bet you that's what they're betting on. And I think they're right. Can you imagine the chaos that's going to come from the insolvency of Illinois and California? I don't think Barack Obama's going to let that happen. Now, when they print more money and put it into circulation, then there's fewer and fewer goods on the shelf. And that's why hyperinflation drives the goods off the shelf. Let's just picture that. Let's suppose that you're getting $1,000 a month. But last month, your $1,000 bought X amount, and this month you find out that it buys a bunch less. About 10% less. So you get your next $1,000 check. Are you going to keep it for 30 days and lose 10% of its purchasing power? Or are you going to go out into the marketplace and spend that $1,000 just as fast as you can so that you can get all of the purchasing power that's contained in that $1,000? And that's the definition of hyperinflation. That's when people lose faith in their currency. Then you want to get rid of it as fast as you can, so you buy anything that's on the shelf. So the first thing you'll do, you'll go buy up all the meat and potatoes. When that's gone, then you'll go around picking up whatever's left, including the hominy and grits. Yep, you'll be spending your money buying hominy and grits. And then the shelves will be bare. And that's what happens in hyperinflation. It's a shortage of goods. Famine comes into play. Now, when famine comes to the United States, do you, honest to God, believe that the people of Zimbabwe, Tanzania, Tanganyika, Madagascar, India, China, Russia are going to come to our aid and ship boatloads of stuff to stave off hunger in America? Do you believe that? That's what we do. That's what we've done. When there was disaster in Haiti, my God, we were down there. We just couldn't give those people enough. Now, I don't know that the people around the world wouldn't give it to us because they don't like us. I think it'll be more like they would if they had it, but I don't think they've got it. The world, by the way, is down to a 38-day supply of food. 38 days. Boys and girls, wake up here. Smell some coffee. Bare minimum, you need a 365-day supply. You only get harvest once a year, you know. To have a one-year supply of food for everybody in the country, you'd have to have enough food to feed 6.5 billion people for 365 days. You've got a 38-day supply. You have to have your harvest from year to year. What's going to happen when the Oglala Aquifer goes dry and 50% of the food produced in America comes out of that aquifer, which is now about 80 or 90% pumped out? Has anybody looked ahead 20 years and said, then what are we going to do? We're living for the moment, and we're not living for the future. And we sure as hell aren't thinking about our children. We're spending and consuming today, and let the devil take the hindmost. Well, there's a conclusion that comes from that kind of mentality, and we're right there at the door. Hey, I got to give you a reminder here before we go on that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the predictions for the year 2010. I'm taking a little odyssey here, looking at past history. The Figgy people hit every prognostication that they made right on the head. The only thing wrong with their predictions was the timing. They thought it was going to happen sooner than it actually did. I say that's pretty damn good. The prognosticators here for the future who are saying that this is going to happen in 2010, I think history is going to show that they were exactly right, but their timing was exactly wrong. That's the bottom line. So the commercial banks back in the 1980s were going upside down. And the same problems that we're having today were going on with insurance companies and banks and housing and everything else, but not to the level, not to the extent that it's going on today. So today, if you take a look at the numbers, it would say it's going to happen in 2010, it's going to happen in 2011, it's going to happen in 2012. And it totally discounts, well, what's the Fed going to do? You know, people that are in desperate straits do desperate things in order to prevent desperate outcomes. And they're working hard. I give Tim Gaither and President Obama and all the rest of them, I give them high marks. They're out here working. They're doing their best. But our boat's already gone over the crest of the falls. We're already down 15, 20 feet, picking up speed. And down below us are a lot of rocks. And I suspect that this voyage is going to end abruptly and terribly. There's no going back. We're not going to change anything. Now, a lot of times people say, well, you know, listening to you, Gordon, there's no hope. You know, there's all kinds of hope out there. There's changes can be made at the local level. Changes can be made by people and families. You're not going to turn California around. I don't think you're going to turn Illinois around or the United States or Great Britain or France. Probably not even going to turn Sacramento County around. But individuals lived through the Great Depression. My Aunt Bessie, my Uncle Buster, they all lived through it. And they all survived at the family level. Yeah, they didn't. You know, it was tough. They didn't like it, and it was bad. But they all made it. Then I think that some of us are going to make it. Not all of us, but some of us are going to make it. Let's see if we can't figure out a way to do that. So, most people didn't realize this, but 13 insurance companies failed in 88, 52 in 89. So, if we get a severe downturn, and after 50-some years of recovery, it's got to be sitting out there somewhere. And we're going to be. To steal the words of a man whose lips we all watched carefully, in deep doo-doo. That was President Bush Sr. He says we're all going to be in deep doo-doo. Now, what I find frightening is the rapid rate of deterioration. It's the old story that the light at the end of the tunnel may be an oncoming train. So when we can go 200 years and create less than $500 billion in debt, and then in the next 16 years go to $3 trillion in debt, we're really seeing things get bad faster and faster. So the question is, well, what's going to happen? One of the people I respect most is in government is Chuck Boucher, the former Arthur Andersen partner, who's Comptroller General of the United States. Chuck was sent to New York City about a decade ago to straighten it out financially. And he said that he and the governor, Governor Kerry, sat at a table day after day. Kerry made real tough decisions until they got New York into the kind of shape where they could sell its bonds again. And then so I took my hyperinflation scenario to Chuck, and I said, Chuck, tell me I'm wrong. And Chuck said, you're wrong. I said, great. Now what's going to happen? He said, well, we're going to have a financial panic. We're going to get to the point where the central banks of the world, like Japan and Germany, can see that they're not going to be able to service our debt, and they're going to quit buying our notes. All right, now, boys and girls, that's just happened, just recently, in 2010. Chinese, Germans, and the Japanese have stopped buying our notes. Now, when they have a treasury auction, it's the Federal Reserve, and they've got a bunch of front organizations. We don't know who they are, but down here in the Caribbean, there's a bunch of them. They come in there and they buy those. We think that that's just Fed fronts buying it for the Fed. Then the Fed owns those papers, and then they go out and they print up the money, write the checks, and they pay their bills. Now, central banks can do that. It doesn't do anything for goods on the shelf, but it papers over the debt problem for the day. They can do that for California. See, the federal government can write up $20 billion, send it out to Governor Schwarzenegger, and solve the problem. But it's not going to solve the problem for next year, and the year after, and the year after that. And the people of California are not going to quit the spending. They're not going to raise the taxes. And there's going to have to be a combination of the two, and the Republicans won't raise the taxes, and the Democrats won't cut the spending. So you've got gridlock out there. Well, okay, that gridlock is going to, it'll ungridlock at some point in time. It ungridlocks when there simply isn't any more money there, when there simply isn't any more goods on the shelves. That's all. Then when that happens, you people are going to go ballistic. You'll be out on the streets rioting, burning cars, tipping things over, burning tires. Then they got to call in the troops. They got to call in martial law. And then as a result of that, we've got about 800 of these concentration camps here in the United States, and millions of Americans are going to be locked up in these 800 concentration camps. And the powers that be know that civil unrest is coming. They know that famine's coming. They know economic collapse is coming. They may even know when the date is, because they might have set the date. You and I don't know that. So he said, well, I said, great, now we're going to have a fiscal panic. We're not going to go to hyperinflation. Can you imagine a businessman standing around cheering for a financial panic? But nothing happened, and after about 4 weeks, I started to wonder what those bonds were doing. I think you know that at one point, Japan was buying 35% of our debt, but in about the last 6 to 8 weeks, the Japanese market broke. And I found that the Japanese have scaled back, but the Saudis came in and replaced them 100%. Now we're back at my scenario, which incidentally scares the hell out of me. What our charts show is that in 1995, we're not going to be able to control our deficit and our debt by taxation. And we're going to move to what is called hyperinflation, and by that I mean severe runaway inflation that leads to devaluation of currency. Now, in Brazil and Argentina, they have lopped 6 zeros off of their money in the last few years. Now, that meant that if you had $1 million at the first lop, you now have 1,000. And at the second lop, you had $1. I'll talk a little bit about that later. Now, during World War II, when I was fighting house to house in Germany, I found an old cigar box on the floor where a bunch of money had spilled out. So I picked it up and I looked at it. And it was Weimar Republic money from 1923. Totally worthless. So I picked up about 8 or 10 of those bills and I liberated them and I brought them home. And they hang in my office to this day. One bill especially frightens me because it is 100 million marks. In 1923, they were taking bushel baskets of those 100 million mark notes down to the store to try to buy potatoes and bread. And so that's a great reminder to me. To find out about hyperinflation, we looked at all the countries in the world, the German and the French experience with hyperinflation. Well, that was all too long ago. Israel's a microcosm. Russia's unknown. Yugoslavia was just getting started. They're up about 2,000%. So then we looked at South America and we said, there's where it's at. So we picked Argentina, Brazil, and Bolivia as the best examples of hyperinflation in the world. Now, the problem that I ran into when I talked to people about this, they would say, oh, you studied the banana republics. And I have two parts to my answer. The first is, well, welcome to the United States Banana Republic. And the second answer and most people don't know this, is that by 1938, the fifth largest market in the world was the country of Argentina. That's quite a story. Back in 1938, Argentina was the fifth largest economy in the world. Today, California, just one state here in our union, the United States of America, one state, California, if it were an independent country, would be the sixth largest economy in the world. And they're broke. Bankrupt. They can't pay that debt off themselves. They can't service their debt. The only solution is for the federal government to come in and bail them out, which is going to happen at some point in time. Now, it was very sophisticated, very well run in Argentina, and very knowledgeable. Argentina had excellent agriculture, excellent manufacturing. They had good resources. They're now the world's 78th largest market. So if you think it can't happen in the United States, it can, because it happened in Argentina. For our study, we were very fortunate because we were able to meet with 80 top businessmen in those three countries, Bolivia, Brazil, and Argentina. And they weren't just businessmen. They were government officials, bankers, financial executives. Dr. Jerry Swanson, an economist from the University of Arizona, led the team and took one of our group, a controller and our director of purchasing, and they took four trips over a two-year period. The thing that happened is that all 80 of these businessmen said to us, "What's wrong with you in the United States? You are exactly on the same course that we're on, but about 20 or 30 years behind us." They said, "Everything that we did wrong, you Americans are doing wrong. For example, you have large deficits, you have a deterioration in your balance of payments, you have eroded the confidence of your currency, you have a tendency to blame outsiders and call for protectionism, and finally, the exchange value of your currency is falling. Twice since the mid-70s, we've had to devalue our currency, and there's pressure now to devalue it again." And they said, "All five of the factors are in place, and the United States is following the path to hyperinflation, and we can't understand why you don't see that coming." Well, when Jerry came back from his first trip, I said, "Jerry, give me a synopsis." And he said, "Well, for years in my economics courses at the University of Arizona, I've been teaching that deficits cause inflation." Then he said, "They do. I just saw it in three countries." And I said, "Okay, well, tell me about hyperinflation, and how much time do you have before hyperinflation sets in?" And he said, "Well, in Brazil, it set in 3 days. Now, the terrible thing about hyperinflation is that once it gets started, you can't stop it. You can see them trying to stop it now in Argentina. And you see them trying to stop it now in Brazil. So Brazil's a wonderful example. They put in wage and price controls. They seized 80% of the capital of the people. They did all of the right things, but 54% of the people worked for the government. And they turned around and gave them pay increases to keep pace. They're reinflating right now. And during the time that we were studying this, Argentina's inflation hit 5,000%. Brazil's got to 5,000%, and Bolivia got to 25,000%, with bursts up to 50,000%. So let me tell you how bad that is. We have a book here that we published on how to survive hyperinflation if you're a businessman. Now, we have a picture of a guy with a huge bag going into a bank in Bolivia. At the bank, they simply weighed it. And then they gave him a note of exchange. Now, the terrible thing about that is that nobody looked in the bag. They didn't care whether he had newspapers in there or old socks or $1,000 bills or $10,000 bills or dollar bills. They didn't care what it was. The money was so worthless. That's what happens in hyperinflation. So to say that this cannot happen here in America is just dead wrong. I hear the argument periodically that the reason that it won't happen to us is that our deficit is only 5% of our gross national product. The Brazilian and Argentine deficits were only 8% of their gross national products. It's not a huge jump from 5 to 8%. So when these economists give you the garbage that our deficit's only a few percentage points of the gross national product, that doesn't mean anything. And if inflation hits South America's standards, in 1 month a cab going out to the airport would go from $15 to $600. Our guys went from and into a supermarket in South America and watched a lady pick up a loaf of bread, only to have the price change before she got to the cash register. And the standard joke down there is, take a cab, don't take a bus. In a cab, you don't have to pay until you get out. And by then, the money is worth less. Now, right now, Yugoslavia has over 2,000% inflation per year. You have inflation in Israel. You don't read much about it. But you have a very severe inflation in Russia. Now, there's inflation going on all around the world. And when you look behind it, it's due to the deficits of the governments. Deficits of the governments. And for 8 years, I've been ready to beat my head against Congress, but it wasn't until we got to this so-called budget crisis that I could even get in to see these congressmen and make any sense to them. There was never a more important time than right now, and there's never been a more important issue. It isn't a Democratic issue, nor is it a Republican issue. It's an American issue, and we've got 5 years left before we lose our capability to offset this problem, at least through taxation, and even that would be about 100% taxation. Now, the voice of the people has got to be heard, and this is why I'm talking to the League of Women Voters. We need strong operations out in the field to go and sit down with these guys and say, look, you either wake up or you're not coming back to Congress. Sure, Medicaid is great. Sure, Social Security is great. And all of these other entitlement programs, they're great. They're wonderful programs. But we aren't going to be around here in 5 or 10 years if you don't balance our budget and balance it right now. And a tax increase, I guarantee, is not going to balance it. They are going to spend 68 cents more than you give them. So in closing, what I want to say to you is this. I don't think it can't happen here. If Argentina can go from 5th to 78th because of this kind of deficit problem, we can go from 50th or from 1st to 250th very, very easily. Now, you hear people jumping on us over becoming a second-rate power. And here I'm talking about a third-rate power or less here in the United States. This is what we're talking about. But I'll guarantee you this, if this hits, and I hope to God I'm wrong, and Chuck Boucher is right, but if it hits, your savings and bonds, your insurance, your pension, you might as well use them for tissue because they aren't going to be good for anything else. And we know that from what we've seen around the world, that's about what's going to happen here. So I think when you go to bed at night, just kneel down and pray that I'm nuts and that the Chuck Bouchers are right and that we get a fiscal panic here in about the next 2 years. Well, we've still got some time to fix our economy. And with the happy message, or with that happy message, I'm going to close this, and I would like to, or I'd be glad to take any questions. Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you. Now, that was Harry Figge. He made these speeches back in 1990, and he wrote a little book. It's called Tackle the Debt Before It's Too Late. I don't know if you can get a copy of it or not. I'll bet you that the Figge Corporation probably has them. They're in Ohio, 4420 Sherwin Road, Willoughby, Ohio. 44094. Now, the point here isn't to read you a treatise about what happened in the 1980s and 90s. The lesson for us to learn here is that we didn't take action in the 80s and 90s when there was something constructive we could have done about it. Now, when it's impossible to do anything constructive about it, President Obama formed a commission, just like the Grace Commission, and they've been totally rebuffed. They've been totally put down. Nobody's going to do that. So then the only other solution is that it has to be imposed upon us. It'll just be imposed. It's like the bank is going to impose austerity upon you by taking the car away. The mortgage company is going to impose austerity upon you by taking your house away. Austerity is being imposed upon the British, and they're out in the streets rioting. Civil disorder is the result. They're just getting started. In the case of Greece and Ireland, somebody came in and bailed them out. Who do you think is going to come in here and bail the United States out? That isn't going to happen. So our powers that be are in the process of bailing us out. They're just printing up the money and sending it out and paying the bills. That works. The federal government can just print up the money and bail California out, and that's what they're going to do. But that'll be $20 billion less goods on the shelf because there's no corresponding production. Wealth, boys and girls, comes from production. And if we thought that we could all become rich by just printing up $1 million and passing it out to everybody, well, why don't we try that? If we just had our government print up $1 million and send out $1 million to everybody, boy, that would stimulate the economy. Now, with my $1 million, I go down and buy a brand new Ford car or pickup, and so would everybody else. And pretty soon our Ford dealer would be out of inventory. He would phone Detroit and say, hey, send me 3 truckloads of cars. Now, unfortunately, all of the Ford workers up there that make these cars, they also got $1 million, remember? And they're all out busy spending their money. Who's going to do the work? You see, all of this deficit financing that's been going on for the last 80 years has that effect. Now, Americans don't want to work. We're out busy spending our money, living the high life. Now we have to import our labor. Now we got all the Mexicans and Guatemalans. Got all these foreigners. They come into the country, and they're doing the work. The ultimate end to this is national captivity and the collapse of the economy and a change in your civilization. That's coming. It's always happened in the past. It's what happened to Rome. It'll happen to us. The question arises, when's that going to happen? The truth is, we don't know. And the gurus are not doing us any favors by telling us these phony dates. Phony dates don't solve our problem. Since we don't know the date, we just know the events. History repeats itself. History is coming down on us. And our politicians know it. Barack Obama knows it. That's why we've got 800 of these concentration camps. We'll take a look at those 800 concentration camps before we finish this week. Meanwhile, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Well, that's it. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.